Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Torah Studies. This is our weekly journey into the soul of the Torah portion. This week's Torah portion is Vayera. It's great to have good friends back. Welcome back, welcome back. And welcome back as well. So we are very excited to study Torah all together. Please open up your chumashim to the Torah portion of this week, which is Vayera. You can find it on page 94 and 95, Hebrew and English, page 94 and 95. Okay, so let's set up the discussion. Today's topic is Be My Guest. It's all about hospitality. Now, when I say the word hospitality, what do you think?
Hotels.
Wait, so feeding, hotels, Avram, Abraham. I want to focus on hotels for a second, because there's an industry that we like to call
hospitality.
The hospitality industry, right? Huge industry.
Tremendous.
How much money is coming in through the hospitality industry?
Billions.
That's got to be a billion-dollar industry, right? Multiple billions of dollars? For sure, right? It's huge. So that's what you think of when you think of hospitality. But I will tell you this. The hospitality that we'll speak of today was a not-for-profit situation. Although Abraham was a prophet and Sarah was also a prophetess, it was run by prophets, but it was not for
501c3.
Not for profit. A different type of prophet, you know. Okay. So we're talking about Abraham and Sarah's hospitality. They were the founders of the industry. And then people took it and ran with it, and they've been profiting ever since. Or prophesying ever since. So, let's jump in to the narrative. The Torah portion opens up with a really fabulous depiction of Abraham's hospitality. It mentions Abraham, although Abraham and Sarah were a team. They had built this space for guests, and they were certainly partners in it. The Torah focuses on Abraham, perhaps it's because this is coming on the heels of Abraham's, not to mix metaphors, but it's coming on the heels of Abraham's circumcision. And so at the ripe old age of 99, of course, Abraham is circumcised, and he's circumcised, and he's in pain. It's the third day, famously, and he's waiting for guests. Page 95. Tim, please get us started. Chapter 18 of the book of Genesis.
God appeared to Abraham in the plains of Mamre 3 days after his circumcision, while he was sitting at the entrance to the tent, where he had been looking for passersby's welcome in the heat of the day. He looked around and saw, look, three angels in the form of men were standing in front of him. He realized that they did not wish to trouble him, so he ran toward them from the entrance of the tent and prostrated himself on the ground. He said, my lords, if I have found favor in your eyes, please do not go away from your servant. Please, let some water be brought by my staff so you can bathe your feet and recline under the tree. I will get some bread for you to satisfy your hearts. Afterward, you may continue on. I ask this of you because you have honored me by visiting your servant. They said, do what you have suggested. Abraham rushed to Sarah's tent and said, quickly, get three se'ah of sifted flour, knead them, and make loaves. Abraham ran to the cattle, took three tender and good calves, and gave them to the young lad, Ishmael, and he hurried to prepare the three cooked tongues with mustard. He took cream, milk, and the calves that he prepared, and placed them in front of the angels. He stood over them under the tree as they pretended to eat.
All right, perfect. So this is good. So this is good for our opening discussion. So what happens? Abraham is speaking to whom? In the beginning of the Torah portion, Abraham is conversing with?
Angels.
Well, before the angels arrive on the scene? Before that. Look at the opening. God appeared to Abraham. Hashem. So there's a vision. There's a meeting of God and Abraham. And what happens? Right? Abraham is like speaking to God, but you know when you're speaking to someone and texting? You know what that's like, right? It's like, 1 second, I'm texting, but I'm speaking, but I'm texting, but I'm speaking. Right? Well, so God is speaking to... So Abraham, Avraham Avinu is speaking to God, and at the same time, he's looking around. He's by the entrance of the tent. He's like, yeah, looking around for passersby.
He's bored with God because he's looking around. Right?
He's looking around. He's seeing what's out there. So what happens is, he notices on the horizon, he notices three individuals approach. At that point, it seems like we know, because they put in the parentheses, they ruined the surprise. Spoiler alert, parentheses right there. We know that our tradition tells us that these were not men, but they were rather angels. But they appeared in human form, and they appeared to be human beings. So what does Avram do? What does Abraham do?
He welcomes them.
And what about God? What about God? So famously, we know that what did Abraham say to God? TTYL. Talk to you later. I got guests. We'll talk later. I gotta go. Right? He's telling God, I gotta put you on hold. We'll speak later. You know, call me later tonight. I gotta go. I got guests. You gotta take care of them. This is an incredible moment. It's so dramatic and it's so subtly portrayed in Torah. God appears to Abraham, and then angel, and then these men appear, these human-looking people appear, and human-looking forms appear, and then Abraham tends to their needs. It's almost like it's this massive idea, and this major piece of the narrative is just casually thrown into the narrative without much fanfare. And of course. The commentaries point out, the Talmud discusses this, Rashi on our verse points this out. Rashi explains, quoting the Talmud, that this episode teaches us a foundational lesson of what it means to have a Jewish heart. Text number 2, Ray. Please read page 41. Oh, sorry. We're now in the Torah studies text. So open up your booklets, or if you have a book, the book will do. Either one, page 41. Text number 2, Rashi's commentary. Page 41, text number 2. Oh, if you need a book, here, pass it down. We got. Pass it down. All right. Take it away, Ray.
Rabbi Huda said, in the name of Rav, hosting guests is greater than hosting the divine presence, as the verse states, and Abraham said, my Lord, if only I have found favor in your eyes, please do not pass on and decide your service.
So what does Rav Yehuda say in the name of Rav? Hosting guests is greater than hosting the divine presence. How huge is that? Look at that idea. Hosting guests, human, what he thought were human guests, is greater than hosting the Shekhinah itself, the divine presence. Did someone say presence? The other presence. See, right? This is the lesson that we derive. The Talmud derives this in tractate, I think it's tractate Brachot, Shabbat, tractate Shabbat. The Talmud derives this, Rashi cites it, and it becomes a lesson for all time. They tell a story about a Hasidic Rebbe, not a Chabad Rebbe, but another Hasidic Rebbe who was expecting visitors in his home, and he was either a family member or somebody else, another member of the community, saw him going up and down from his attic, schlepping bedding. And he said to him, the other fellow said to the rabbi, said to this Hasidic Rebbe, he said, let me help you with this. What, you don't need to schlep, I'll schlep. So the Rebbe says to this fellow who's trying to help, he says, look, if you see me in shul, in synagogue, and I'm holding, or I'm going to synagogue, whatever it is, and I'm carrying my talit and tefillin, or I'm in synagogue and I'm putting them on, are you going to tell me, no, I'll do it. Does that work? Of course not. In other words, if it's a mitzvah on you, you got to do the mitzvah. And it's not only you have to do the mitzvah, it's a zchut, it's an honor to do the mitzvah. So he said, if the Talmud teaches that welcoming guests is greater than speaking to God, so if I daven to God myself and you don't do it for me, shouldn't I welcome guests myself? Or shouldn't I prepare for the welcoming of guests myself and you shouldn't do it for me? So that was his way of putting into practice this idea. So the yeah.
Now, I noticed that in the Hebrew, and I've never paid attention to this before, but he says Adonai, which means sirs, and the way,
yes.
My master's, right? And the way it's written, obviously it's not God's name.
Correct, right.
But then he says, "Im na matzati chen ve'einecha." And then he goes, "Al na ta'avor me'alav." In the singular, not in the plural.
Mm. Interesting, very
interesting.
So maybe
he's talking to both of them at the same time. That he's excusing himself from God and saying, please don't take offense of the fact I'm running out
I do believe there is a commentary,
yeah.
Not a mainstream commentary, that says that when he says in the third verse, he says, Adonai, like my lords,
yeah,
which we think is referring to him speaking to, which most say, there is, I believe there is a commentary, I can't tell you who, but I believe, I remember reading where at some point, in the past, where there is a commentary that says that it's him speaking to God and saying to God, don't leave.
God could be singular and plural.
Right.
Not many God, but
right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting idea. Now, the question is like this. The question is, why is this indeed so? We're learning the value of hospitality, that it's greater to welcome guests. It's greater to be hospitable than even to receive the divine presence. But the question is why? Or how do we explain that? How do we understand that? How is welcoming a person of flesh and blood greater than God himself?
Because it actually is flesh and blood. And God put that on earth for us to take care of.
You're saying God is giving us this mission, so we can't tell them to wait for God. This is why we're here. Very good. We're going to have two other explanations. I like your perspective. It's straightforward and it's right there. We're going to quote two somewhat mystical interpretations. Text 3 and text 4. Text 3 is from the Maharal of Prague, Rabbi Yehuda Loy of Prague, the creator of the Golem and famous for that. Text 4 is from Yishai HaLevi Horowitz, Rabbi Yishai HaLevi Horowitz, the author of the Shnei Luchot HaBrit known as the Shalah. So these are both mystical texts. In fact, in the book of Tanya, I mentioned this when we started a new study of Kabbalah and Coffee this past Sunday, when in Tanya, when the Alter Rebbe writes in Tanya that he compiled the book of Tanya from other books. So the two books that he's referring to, or the two sages of authors that he's referring to, are the Maral and the Shalah. So it's interesting how we have them back to back here in our text. Yeah.
Could it be Ben Adam Lachavei?
Yeah, I think that's what Anita is saying. In other words, you're talking about kind of the tension, if you will, in the moment between a relationship with God or a relationship with a fellow human being. And so you're saying, Bein Adam L'Chavero, between a person and his fellow or her fellow, that's going to trump God, right? That's gonna supersede the relationship with God at this moment. Why? The question is why? Because that's what we're here for. God puts us here with other people and says, help each other out. I'm here for a while. You help out.
But I'm saying at the same time it also honors God because
we're doing what God wants us to do. Right? Perfect. Take a look at text number 3. Here's an very interesting twist. I think you'll all find it pretty compelling. Text 3. Jillian, please read this one, page 42.
Rabbi Yehuda said, hosting guests is greater than hosting the divine presence. The reason for this is because man was created in the image of his maker. By contrast, when hosting the divine presence, one is not giving respect to God himself, for man will not see me and live. Hosting God is unlike hosting guests. One respects a newcomer to his home, he cherishes his guest. When he sees him, the host completely connects with this divine image when he appears before him. This is greater than hosting the divine presence, for it is impossible to truly connect with the divine presence.
Let me explain what he's saying. What he's saying is like this. Abraham is encountering the Shekhinah, the divine presence. Can he fully connect with God? Can he fully embrace God at that moment? The answer is, Ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. Your person, God says, when Moshe asked, let me see your face. God famously, after the sin of the golden calf, God says, no one can see my face and
live.
In other words, you can't see God face to face. It's not possible. What about when another human being comes around? A human being who has a soul, and the soul is a piece of God. And a human being you can relate to. And you can love, and you can embrace, and you can feed, and you can help, and you can listen to, right? You can connect with a human being. Turns out that that connection with a human being is a more intimate connection than we can connect with God. In other words, you connect with God in the form of a vision or an encounter, but not in the same way that you actually interact with another human being. So the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, as it's disembodied, in other words, the Divine Presence on the level of a cosmic Divine Presence, so you can't really hold on to. So Abraham's encounter with God is still somewhat weak, if you will. Whereas when what he thinks are people, when the guests arrive, and he can really connect with them, and they have a piece of God inside of them, he's connecting more with God then than when he's connecting with God without guests. Does it make sense? In other words, when greeting the Shekhinah, it's less of a connection with God on a spiritual level than when hosting guests who have a piece of God inside of them. Isn't that a beautiful concept? In other words, where do you find God? In each other. In each other. In your fellow human being. So this is, Anita, this is, I think, adding on a little bit a spiritual component to it. It's not just that God wants us to help out each other, which is true. But it's that when we do so, we're more, objectively, we're more connected with God's presence than when we try to go straight to the source, because we can't really connect purely to the source. So we connect closer through another human being who has a piece of God inside of them than when we try to go straight to the source. It's like they tell a story of the disciples, maybe of the Baal Shem Tov, maybe not. I don't know. It happened a long time ago. And they were studying, or maybe just they were yeshiva students or whatever it is. They were studying in the yeshiva, and they were in very deep in discussion, Torah discussions, and a wagon driver comes and runs in. He's very frantic. He runs in to the synagogue. And he says to the study hall, and he says, my horse and wagon, it went off the road, the horse fell over, the wagon is, the wheels are off, whatever it is. Can you please help me? I need help. I'm not too far down the road. Can you help me out? I'm afraid. And so immediately the Torah scholars, the students, they broke out into a big discussion about what supersedes what. Should the Torah learning supersede helping this fellow, or should helping this fellow supersede the Torah learning? By the time they concluded that it's time that helping this fellow supersedes the Torah learning, the horse was dead, and unfortunately, right, the horse had died, and there was nothing that they could do to bring back the horse. So the point is like this: sometimes, you know, it doesn't say that Abraham put God on hold to greet horses. But what it does say is that when it comes to hospitality, when it comes to other human beings, the Maharal says, you can find God in that experience greater, perhaps, than any type of meditation or prayer or other type of communion with God that you can try to pull off on your own, disembodied, outside of another human being. It's not going to be as powerful as that. Text number four, yeah. I would venture to say that every human being has a soul, and every human being has a soul that is divine. There are different souls for different people.
But it shouldn't stop you,
could they? I don't think it's just no. I don't think so. Right? Okay. Let's take a look at text number four. In other words, the notion, he says, "Tzelem Elokim," in the image of God, right? Adam and Eve created in the image of God, and every human being is created in the image of God. And I think that the point is that this image of God, to connect with a human form of an image of God, is a more real connection than the pure image of God in the image of God. That makes sense. In other words, the image of God on its own, good luck connecting with. I mean, how close are you going to get to the image of God? You can't see my face and live, but you could see another human being's face and they're created in the image of God, that's a closer connection on one level, yeah.
So, you know, Sarah, I was thinking, this happened to me last week. It doesn't happen that often, but I had a very unusual experience on 75 of all places. I can tell you, you know, after Torah study. But there was a person whose eyes I looked into that truly is still with me. I mean, it's like, you know, there are those people that you do connect with, even strangers, children, adults, it doesn't matter, that is somewhat otherworldly. And I'm
interesting
about that as you're talking about this connection of, you know, with God through other human beings. I mean, it's stronger with some and less with others, but it can be really powerful.
I want to hear about how you're looking at someone's eyes on 75. Wait, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
We only go 2 miles an hour on 75.
Well, okay, I guess so. Well, we'll talk about it after the class. Text number 4. Let's take a look at what the Shalah says. The Shalah has a different angle on it. He talks about the notion of it's actually similar to what you mentioned. What was mentioned before? It's the difference between connecting with God on a personal level, or in a sense, emulating God, as we'll see explained in text 4.
Whoever keeps this mitzvah fulfills the positive mitzvah, and you shall walk in the way in his ways. For God hosts guests every hour and at all times and in every instant. For if he would not host guests, the world would immediately cease to exist. For the entire world are God's guests. We are strangers. He hosts existence itself with the bounty he abundantly supplies.
So the Shalah says, look at this. God is constantly being machnes archim. God is constantly hosting and honoring guests and welcoming people in. God is constantly practicing hospitality. We are all guests in God's universe. We're guests in God's world. And God is a good host. He gives us life. He gives us, you know, more or less what we need. Please God, right? So by inviting others into our homes, our individual homes, what we're doing is not just a good deed, but we're literally emulating God. God, everything belongs to God, and God shares with us. When we share with another, we're emulating God. And therefore, that's more powerful, in a sense, than speaking with God. Because speaking with God is not emulating God, it's speaking with God. When you emulate God, now you're really godly. If you're speaking to God, you're a human being who's speaking to God. But when you emulate God, that's a more powerful step. And so therefore, Abraham, Avram Avinu, he says to God, excuse me, but I need to copy you. I need to emulate your ways. Or I need to see the divine presence as it's incarnate, as it's manifest through a human being in the human experience. Either way, the point is that we have a few explanations on why indeed, it's greater to welcome guests than even to receive the divine presence. The question that we're going to ask right here at the end of section one, our first act of this class, the question we're going to ask is, it seems like the whole lesson that we're learning from Abraham, it seems like the whole thing is a fraud. It's a hoax. Why? Because Abraham didn't actually welcome guests. He didn't actually look into human beings of flesh and blood with the image of God.
He thought they were, right?
Good intentions can only go so far, right? What did they say?
The road to
Yeah, it's paved with good intentions. Now I was thinking, close is only good for horseshoes. How am I messing this up?
But there's hand grenades and horseshoes.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that's also true. Okay, let's take a look at text 5. Text 5, of course, is based on everything that we've said until now. Sarah, please read this one. Right, so the angels are down here, so they, you know, went in Rome. Do what the Romans do. So the angels are eating. They're not really eating. They're pretending to eat. They want to be good guests. Abraham hosts them. He thinks they're human beings. He thinks they're three men. Really, they're three angels. And they're also keeping up the illusion, and they appear to be eating. The question that is asked, and this is a question that some commentators ask, but it's specifically asked also by the Lubavitcher Rebbe in one of his talks. The Rebbe asked the following question. He says, we derive so many practical, pragmatic laws from this story of Abraham. We derive this notion of hosting and hospitality and welcoming guests. And as we'll see in the second section, so many of the details of how to host and how to take care of your guests are derived from this story. And in truth, they didn't need it. They didn't need it. They didn't need a place to rest. They didn't need any shade. They didn't need to wash their feet. They didn't need to eat. Garnish, nothing, nothing. In other words, what did Abraham do objectively? Not what he thought he did. What did he do? Did he benefit them? The answer is no. So it's interesting, the Rebbe points out, and the Rebbe asks, it's interesting that we would learn all of these practical laws regarding hospitality from a situation in which no hospitality actually took place.
Well, he welcomed them.
Fine. I'll give you... Exactly, there was no benefit from it. In other words, of course, we all know that his intentions were good. But bottom line is, did he get it done? He didn't get it done. There was nothing to get done. It's not a flaw in what he did. The point is, the story is a little bit missing. The story itself falls short. This is not at all a condemnation or any besmirching of Abraham's character. It's a very pragmatic question. The pragmatic question is, how are we deriving a law regarding actual hospitality from a situation where no hospitality actually happened? There was an intent to do hospitality and actions done that under different circumstances would have been performing an act of hospitality and hosting, but it didn't actually happen.
But he was feeding them meat and dairy together, so I'm glad they didn't eat.
Right? Well, that's a... Oh my gosh, that's a big topic, and we've had multiple classes on that one as well. What's with the meat and milk together? What was he doing? What was he thinking? What were they doing? Yeah.
So this is all what he usually does anyway. So it
correct.
Still is
applicable. Yeah, but so we should derive it from a situation where it actually hit. I'll give you an example. Let's say someone, you know, this is actually a compelling example. I feel like if I ask this as a question. I want to ask this as a question. What happens if somebody approaches you for tzedakah, for a charity, and you give them? It turns out that they didn't need it. They didn't need it at all. It's not your problem. Fine. You gave it, whatever. Here's my question. Did you do the mitzvah of giving tzedakah? What? Was there a mitzvah here? It's a good question, no?
Yeah.
Good question. Did tzedakah happen? If tzedakah is defined as you being charitable, maybe. If tzedakah is defined as fulfilling a need of that person, did you do tzedakah? There was no need. No one's blaming the giver, and there's nothing wrong with what the giver did, and we love the giver, and we're going to give the giver a hug. And a pat on the back, huh?
But I want my money back.
But I want my money. But give me a refund. Let me call my credit card, right? But again, if you look at, right, understand the question, right? If there was no need, if you define tzedakah as fulfilling a need, and there was no need, did you do? It's there's. I'm not saying not to give. Wait. I'm not saying not to give. I'm asking another question. I'm asking objectively. The big no. Of course you don't know. You're not supposed to ask, and you don't know, and you might never know. I'm asking a question. I pull back the curtain, and I'm telling you. You gave, and you thought, and you felt, and you were generous, and there was no need. Did tzedakah happen? The answer is no. No. You are still generous and keep on giving. Keep on giving and don't be discerning. Keep on giving. This is not cold water over anybody. But I'm telling you a fact. Tzedakah does not happen Right? Tzedakah, the mitzvah of tzedakah happens when you fulfill a need in someone else. If there's no need, you didn't do tzedakah. It's not a bad, huh? Of course you don't know. Keep on giving. I'm not saying don't give. I'm not saying because tzedakah didn't happen, therefore the giver is a shlemazel and a shlemiel, and how could they? Why did they? They shouldn't in the future. I'm not saying any of that. None of that. I'm just saying very simply, objectively speaking. It's like a story that I love of somebody who sees the construction crew down a street, and there's one guy digging a hole. There's two guys on the crew. One guy with a truck and a cone, right? One guy's digging a hole, and the next guy's coming back and filling it up. And that's it. Digging, filling, digging, fill. And the observer is thinking, how do you explain this? How can you possibly explain this? He decides he needs to find out. He goes over to one of the fellows and says, what are you guys doing? Your tax dollars don't work, great. He says, look, there's usually three of us, right? One guy digs the hole, the other guy puts in the pipe, and the other guy fills it up. The pipe guy is not here. Because he's not here, we need to work, so we're digging holes and filling them up again. Right? I want to ask you a question. Did you lay the pipe? Did you put down, did you get it? No, you didn't. Right?
The
effort was done, the intention was there, you didn't get it done, right? Tzedakah was not given, even though money was given and generosity was expressed, and it was wonderful. I'm not taking away from the giver's experience, but can you say tzedakah was given? Yeah.
The deeper question is, if you only have so much to give to tzedakah, right, then, and you gave it to somebody that didn't need it, then you deprived somebody who did need it. So
I don't want to get too caught up in this, because the point is not to take away anyone's giving. The point is not to take away anyone's generosity or anyone's judging others for benefit and for the good. This is not made to be. This is not intended for us to start becoming discerning, and it's not about that. It's a very pragmatic question, and this is the Rebbe's question about Avraham Avinu, about Abraham. He thought he was being hospitable. He thought he was helping out passersby traveling in a hot desert who needed some shade and needed some drink and needed some food and needed a place to. You know, he thought he was helping. Was he helping anybody? He wasn't helping anybody. No one needed help. They were angels. They didn't need anything.
Wasn't this a setup?
But here's the question. How do we learn the mitzvah of hospitality from a situation in which hospitality didn't happen? So to understand this, let's explore. Does the question make sense? Okay. So to understand this, let's take a look at how the mitzvah of hachnasas archim, welcoming guests, hospitality, how it's described in classic Jewish sources throughout the ages. We're going to skip text 6. Let's begin with text number 7, this part of the discussion, section number 2. Sindrine, I believe we're up to you. Text 7, page 46.
When a guest comes to town and stays with a local community member, it is my custom to visit the home every day out of respect for both the host and the guest. I praise the host, encourage him, and give him credit in order to endure the mitzvah to him. I tell the host, the kindness you bestow upon the guest, it is as if you have provided that kindness to me and the entire city, since it is everyone's responsibility to host, and if you would not host him, all the city's residents would transgress the mitzvah.
So here we have a real-life example of a rabbi, Rabbi Chaim Palagi, who lived in Turkey, Izmir, Turkey, and he says that when anyone was hosting, he would visit the host and the guest and bestow honor and give him credit, etc., to make this mitzvah of hospitality very dear, because it's a mitzvah incumbent on each one of us to welcome in guests. Let's take a look at Rabbeinu Bechai. I love this. I text 8, I am absolutely enthralled with. I love everything about it. Anita, please read this one, page 47, Rabbeinu Bechai.
Word vayita and planted appears twice.
first is, and he planted a garden in Eden to the east. East. Is that supposed to be true?
The garden in Eden to the east.
The garden.
Did it say Eden?
Eden to the east.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the second is in connection with Abraham's hospitality. This teaches that one who hosts guests is granted entry to Eden.
How beautiful is that? It says at the end of this Torah portion, Vayita Eshel, that Abraham, we'll have the verse soon, we'll quote it inside, Vayita Eshel, that Abraham, Sukhazun, that Abraham planted an Eshel, which is a hospitality in Be'er Sheva. So that's what it says, Vayita. And Rabbeinu Bechaya points out, Vayita is only found twice in Scripture. In the five books of Moses, this word only appears twice. One is Vayita in the Garden of Eden, and one is Vayita, Abraham's tent of hospitality. If you're hospitable, if you host, then you're granted entry to Gan Eden, into the Garden of Eden. It's such a beautiful idea. Let's look at what the Talmud says. The Talmud says that welcoming guests and hosting people for a meal is akin to the altar itself. And text 9.
Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish both taught that the holy temple stood the altar atones for one's sins. Today a person's table atones for his sins when he invites guests.
Rashi points out, not when you're just, eating a steak, but when you have guests over, right, and you feed them. Think about the altar for a second. Let me go back to the altar. What happened? Person did something wrong, whatever, so they went to the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, and they brought an offering. What happened to the offering? They brought the animal, they put it on the altar, and a fire came down from heaven. There was a fire below and a fire above, and it consumed part of the offering. Some of it was eaten, typically. Some of it was consumed with fire. And the point is that God, in a sense, was consuming the offering, and through that act of consumption on the altar's table, so the person was atoned. So Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, they both thought, and by the way, that's significant. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were brothers-in-law, and they were always disagreeing on matters. They were always at odds. That's like Hill, Shammai, Abaye, Rava, Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan. They were pairs of, not combatants, but that sounds like they're actually fighting. They were, whatever the word is, they were, huh?
Rivals.
Not even rivals. That, again, sounds more insidious than it is. They were intellectual sparring partners. But here, Amitarvayu, they both agreed to this point. They both taught this idea. And what is it? That when you have guests at your home and you give them something to eat, you put food on your table and you share it with guests, that is God, in a sense, consuming the offering on your altar, and that atones for your sins, for our sins. Text 10a. Here's a lesson, practical lesson, that the Chafetz Chaim derives from Abraham's modality, specific form of hospitality. It's a wonderful idea. Dan, please read this one, 10a.
At the beginning of Parsha, the Torah recounts Abraham's hospitality, how he was still recovering from circumcision, yet still he would sit at the entrance of his hospitality tent in the heat of the day to see if perhaps he could spot from afar after some passerby, bring them inside. When he saw them, he ran toward them and prostrated himself and spoke to them gently in the hopes of inviting them into his home. Although we are not necessarily capable of keeping the mitzvah at this level, we can at least learn from this the need to seek out guests and host them with affection as one goes to
So the Chafetz Chaim says with this idea that Abraham sat and proactively looked for guests. So it's not enough that if we hear of a need and whatever and somebody's asking, then we say, fine, okay, you can come over, you can stay, you can eat, whatever. But that really we should be proactive to seek out guests and to seek out this mitzvah of hospitality and be proactive about it like Abraham. Another lesson that the Chafetz Chaim derives, text 10b, from the same text. Let's continue. David, go ahead.
After inviting them in, Abraham requested of his guests that while he prepared something to eat, they should rest under the trees, for it is good to be there in the shade, and that they rest from the burden of travel. From this we learn that before preparing food for guests, one should offer them a place to rest from the burden of travel.
Oh, so it's not just enough to bring them in and feed them, but you also have to give them a chance to sit down, take a seat, relax, under the tree, under the shade, right, in the couch. All right, 10
Si, Chazan, Ben.
And he himself stood at their service while they ate.
In other words, he didn't ask someone else to serve the food and to be involved in the meal. He didn't delegate it. He himself was involved personally. He did delegate some of the cooking, just because he couldn't do it all. But actually serving them, he participated in it. So again, we're learning so many beautiful ideas of how we should practice the mitzvah of hospitality, of achnasas arachim, of welcoming guests into our home. We can learn it from this incredible story of Avram, of Abraham. Take a look at text 10D. Karen, please read this one.
If he hosts them for the night, he should give them the best and most appropriate beds in the house. For a tired man enjoys great comfort from a good night's sleep. Sometimes offering a place to stay is of greater benefit than offering food and drink. The host should consider it to himself, if I were to be hosted at my guest's home, surely I would want him to honor and give me food and drink and a comfortable bed. I will do the same for him. And what goes around comes around.
So you know what this means? The blow-up mattresses that we have? We should take those, right? Isn't that what it's saying? Right? We should take those and give the good stuff to the guests. Right? Nah, Mike is like, you had me until the bed thing. I was ready to go. I'll be more proactive. I'll be involved. I'll look out for the guests. Whatever. But I'm not giving up my pillow. It's not happening. Not my. Listen, this is the ideal, right? The ideal is it's also a perspective and how we honor guests and how we think about those people that come into our homes and we treat them with true honor and respect. In a sense, putting their needs on some level before our own. I remember the first generation of those air, I don't know if it was the first generation, but when I first encountered one of those air mattresses, I remember you used to lie down on those, and in the morning, you were on the ground. I'm not wrong here. I'm not. I know technology has come a long way.
Like, they have these ones now that you, you know.
Itself? Yeah, itself. Yeah, you don't need a separate thing.
And they unfold and they're off the ground and they blow up. And
oh, I don't know if I've seen the off the ground one.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. Here's what I always. If we put people on the moon, we can figure out how to get a blow-up mattress that doesn't sink to the ground, right? If you figure out how to create these, if you can break through whatever that is, what is it? What are we breaking through when you go into a rocket?
The atmosphere.
The atmosphere, there you go. You heard about the first Jewish wedding on Pluto? The band was great, but there was no atmosphere. Ay, whoa. Pluto joke. You didn't see that happening. Yeah, if we can break through the atmosphere and keep people alive and create spacesuits, you can totally create a blow-up mattress that doesn't sink to the ground. That's my theory, and it's proven to be correct. Okay, so the point is, give the good stuff to the guests. Yeah.
So I just want some clarity about this idea of hosting.
Yes.
So is it specific to a person and their home? Or is this mitzvah able to be performed in another kind of setting?
I would say for sure. The theme, the energy of the mitzvah is extending oneself to benefit someone else. And I think on that level we can certainly extend it and expand it beyond its original literal parameters. It could be, yeah, take someone to lunch, or it could be, I don't know, anything, web hosting. I'm kidding. I have somebody that has a great website, but they need a place for it, so go daddy. Whatever it is, so like.
dilly. We have the situation approaching the border.
Right.
In need.
Right.
When people.
Yeah.
Go and cook meals for people that they're not going to see face-to-face.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Look, the mitzvah of being there for others, there are many different applications. I think when it comes, you mentioned border, that touches on a larger topic that has other pieces to it as well. We actually did a class on immigration and the idea of refugees and what the Jewish perspective is. Fascinating class on it. I should probably post the audio on Facebook. It's a Torah-based approach. It's not a political approach. It's a Torah-based approach. It's fascinating. The various, you have to listen to the
class. It was it had to do that
with the election 2016. It was our election. Sounds like a job for the old Chavrusa detective.
Because if you, if as I recall, if it's the same thing, is if allowing immigrants in is going to endanger your life and livelihood, then there's one perspective. But if
that's a consideration, right?
It's a consideration,
right? And the question is it really, or is that is that just fear and it's unfounded? And that's where halacha has, Jewish law has certain parameters, but what you, in other words, there's a framework. It's almost like, remember Plinko? Not at all like that, but like a flowchart type thing where you, Jewish law will tell you, if you plug in this information, where you go, right, from there. The question is, who's plugging the information? Somebody will say that immigration is dangerous. Economy, safety and security, and others will say, it's not at all dangerous, right? I'm not taking a stance on that. I'm telling you the fact that there are different studies or different models out there that come to different conclusions. Based on those different conclusions, Jewish law would say something else. Like,
I'd be very interested in hearing.
But it's an interest. I'll please God post it on Facebook in the coming days. Okay, so let's get back. Oh, so here's huh. Hurry, quickly. We got to know what to do. All right, text number 11. Oh, I got the big text. When I say big text, this text is going to pivot the conversation and to open up a whole new way of looking at the idea, the mitzvah of welcoming guests, which will then deepen our understanding of not only the mitzvah, but help us understand why Abraham did a mitzvah, even though he didn't seem to benefit the angels. Okay, stay with me. Text number 11, page 51. The reward. Before we do this, Rambam here, Maimonides says that when it comes to the mitzvah of Hachnasas Arachim, of welcoming in guests, he says there's another element to it. It's not just extending the invitation and bring someone in and allowing them to rest for a few minutes and having them a place to wash up and giving them food and drink and taking care of their needs and a bed to sleep in, which we discussed, all these things we discussed. There's another element to it. After they've been hosted and wined and dined and treated like kings, after all of that, there's one more piece. And what is it? Say it loud.
You accompany them when they're leaving.
Right? You get up and you... No. And you... Who's in charge of this class? What's up with it? No, and you accompany... No, God forbid. And you accompany the person to the door and you escort them out. This is a part of welcoming them in, is escorting them out safely outside. Text 11, Rambam. The reward one receives for accompanying guests is greater than all the others, all the other pieces of this mitzvah put together. In other words, feeding and lodging and all that stuff. Accompanying guests out is even greater than everything else. This is a statute that Abraham, our patriarch, instituted as the path of kindness that he would follow. He would feed wayfarers, provide them with drink, and then accompany them. Showing hospitality for guests surpasses receiving the divine presence, as scripture states, etc. We had that before. Accompanying them, next paragraph. Accompanying them is greater than showing them hospitality. Our sages said, whoever does not accompany them is considered as if he had shed blood. Now the pragmatic understanding back in the day is, you know, somebody went out in the middle of the night, whatever it is, were they safe? You know, would they get to the car? So help someone get to the car. Helps not to the car in ancient days, but today, I'm switching eras quickly. Right? It would be help making sure they get to the car safely and whatever it is. But if you don't, then their blood is on your hands, so to speak. God forbid. We compel people to accompany wayfarers in the same manner as we compel them to give charity. The court would prepare agents to accompany people who travel from place to place. I would prefer that it be those. Just because I've never seen that written like this before. If hosts are lax in this matter, it is considered as if they shed blood. Even a person who accompanies a colleague for four cubits, which is about 6 feet, will receive a great reward. And we're going to stop right over there because it gets into some details which are not relevant right now. The point is, there's achila, there's shtia, and then there's levia. There's eating, there's giving someone what to eat,
what to drink, and then there's the notion of accompanying them. Achila, Shtia, Levia, these are the various pieces of it. Take a look. Oh, so now the question is like this. We're going to ask one more question, and then we're going to answer all the questions. The question that we're going to ask now is, what is the big deal about accompanying guests out, about walking them, starting their journey with them on their way out? What's the big deal with that? Why is that so important? Why does Rambam, why does Maimonides say that it's equal to all of the other components? It's even greater than the actual mitzvah of hosting is seeing them off. Why is that such a great element? It seems to be one element, or maybe even the least element. The main thing is bring them in and feeding them. A side issue is making sure they get off safely. But the main thing is, if they're hungry, you bring them in. If they're tired, you give them a bed to sleep. That would seem to be the main part of the mitzvah. So why does Rambam say, no. You know what the most important thing is? Seeing them off. What's up with that?
So you have to be doing all these wonderful things, welcoming them, giving them shade, drink, food, helping them, the best bed. But you could be doing it mechanically, like I wrote. But if
good. Excellent. Right. It's by what? And this is the point that we're going to get to, and the point that the Rebbe points out. It's about six. The minimum is 6 feet.
Four cubits.
You could. Yeah, you could. And in fact, the Talmud says for different people you should go longer, but the minimum is 6 feet.
You know, there's another thing. So if you're accompanying them, you are actually, in a way, expressing a sadness that they're leaving.
Right, there's an empathy there with it, yeah.
As opposed to...
So like, sad, she ain't gonna go either way.
Sure,
they gotta leave. The Chazan has another agenda in mind. It's like, there's only one way that we're gonna make sure. No, God forbid, yeah.
But it also completes the whole hospitality cycle of welcoming right. in and out.
Right.
That's what you do with Shabbos.
Good. I'm thinking in the context of a hotel. Hotels welcome you in, right? They take your bags for you. They welcome you in. And they also...
invite you back another time.
I don't know about inviting you back, but they also do that. But they take your cars to the thing. They get you set back up, hopefully. Get your luggage, right. They bring it in and they take it back up. So here's the point. We're really going with the angle. All these are good angles. We're really going with the angle that Sarah is mentioning.
It's
the
angels, not angels.
It's like that. That was like in the outfield. Yeah. Kidding. Angels in the outfield. Yeah. So this is the Rebbe's explanation. He says like this. There's a fundamental difference between, I mentioned the connection between hospitality and tzedakah before. The Rebbe says they're not the same. They're not the same. When it comes to the mitzvah of tzedakah, if there was no need, there was no mitzvah. When it comes to the mitzvah of hospitality, you know what the mitzvah is? It's not fulfilling a need. Listen to this. I'm going to say it one more time because this is the key point. The Rebbe says that when you look closely at the mitzvah of hospitality, it's fundamentally different than the mitzvah of tzedakah. Tzedakah means that you're fulfilling a need that the other person has. They need something and you give it to them, then you've done the mitzvah fulfilling their need. If they never had a need, we said before, you never did a mitzvah. Even if you had good intentions, but you didn't literally do that mitzvah. But when it comes to hospitality, the mitzvah of hospitality is not fulfilling a pragmatic need necessarily. The mitzvah is connecting with another. That's what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is connecting person to person, warmly connecting, inviting, loving, extending, being generous with another human being, which is why you can't do tzedakah to a wealthy person. It's a contradiction in terms. But you can do hospitality to someone who doesn't need a place to stay. Because even a wealthy traveler who could afford the penthouse, the top floor of
the Ritz,
right? Or the Four Seasons, right? I used to live in a place where we called the Four Seasons because it had no roof. It was a leaky roof. You felt all the seasons. When it was hot, it was hot. When it was cold. When it was rainy. It's original material right there. Anyway. It's for the stand-up show later on this year. Save the date. Anyway, here's the point.
when it comes to tzedakah, a wealthy person, you can't do tzedakah with, because they don't have a need that you're fulfilling. But when it comes to hospitality, you can do hachnasas archim to a wealthy individual. Because it's not about they didn't have a place to stay and you helped them with a place to stay. They did have a place to stay. But you know what they didn't have? They didn't have a connection with somebody else. They didn't have the welcoming embrace. They didn't have the smile. They didn't have the connection. And that's what the mitzvah is really about. Of course, practically speaking, you also give them what they need. Of course, on a practical level. But the main thing of the mitzvah, the primary element of the mitzvah is the personal connection. Does that make sense? Therefore, let's take a look. I'm going to read the next few texts quickly. So therefore, we find the following. Text 14a. Look what the Rebbe says. 14a, page 54. Hosting guests is different than charity, than tzedakah. The host's kind disposition and emotional investment is crucial to his guest's experience. You can give tzedakah without even knowing it. You know, if you drop money and a poor person finds it, you've done the mitzvah tzedakah. But you didn't intend it. You didn't mean it. You didn't know about it. You may have never known about it. Tzedakah happened. It's pragmatic. Tzedakah is simply you were the cause of filling someone else's need. Did that happen? Yes. Doesn't matter if you knew about it, if you didn't know about it. If a coin falls out of your pocket, a dollar bill falls out, someone in need picks it up, you've done the mitzvah. Hosting guests is different. The kind disposition, emotional investment is crucial to the guest experience. Hosting must be conducted in a manner that the guest feels that everything the host does for him is out of personal interest, emotional investment, and ahavas Yisrael, love of a fellow Jew. And the Rebbe continues 14b. The fact that the host's emotional investment is integral to the mitzvah is manifest where? In the obligation to escort the guests home. Where do you see this element of the mitzvah of welcoming guests? Where do you see it manifest? It's in that extra piece of walking them out. Escorting is not about fulfilling a guest's need when he stays in your home, as is the case with ensuring he has food and drink. When the person comes to your home, they didn't come to you for you to walk them out. That's not why they came. They came because they wanted a bed to sleep in, they wanted a place to sit down, they wanted food and drink to eat. And then you did all of that, and you would think, mitzvah is done. No. It's not about just the pragmatic piece of it. It's about the emotional piece of it. It's the connection. And where's that manifest? After you've done everything that they need, show them that you care about them. Show them that there's a connection. Walk them out with your arms around, whatever it is. Walk them out in a way that makes them feel loved. Rather, it's about kindness of character. Consequently, The guest feels that everything his host did for him was out of kindness, was out of the kindness of his heart, that he takes interest in him and cares for his well-being, etc. It wasn't just about, I got to get this guy fed, or I got to get this person to bed, or whatever it is. It's about, I care about you, I love you, I feel a connection with you, and therefore, walking the person out is actually greater than everything else. Because everything else could have just been, I did it because I have to do it. This means that there's a connection. And the whole premise, the whole foundation of this mitzvah, it's not just another form of tzedakah. You could say it's tzedakah, right? Somebody needs money or they need food. This is something else. This is not tzedakah in your home. This is something else. It's called hachnasas archim. It's a different sort of mitzvah. There is a tzedakah element to it where you're also giving, filling a need that they have, a need of food, a need of a place to sleep. There is a tzedakah element, but there's another element. There's an element of a personal connection. And that is expressed when after all the needs are taken care of, you walk them home. And it's expressed by the fact that what did Abraham do? What did Abraham do? Take a look at, I'll get you to your question in a second. Take text 16a. This is the Vayita I mentioned before at the end of this week's Torah portion. Vayita Eshel. Abraham planted an Eshel in Be'er Sheva, and he called there in the name of God, the God of the world. What is the Eshel? Text 16b. Rav and Shmuel argued over the meaning of the word Eshel. One of them maintained that it was a garden from which to bring fruit to his guests to eat. The other argued the Eshel was an inn offering all sorts of fruits. Notice the common denominator is fruit. Why fruit? Because when somebody's hungry, what do they need? What's the core? What's the core of what they need? bread and water, right? The basic staples. I don't know if that's what you think, right? The basic staples. Fruit means that he cared about. He cared about his guests. He didn't just give them the bare minimum. He didn't give them just the inflatable mattress. He gave them, right? Mike, I'm telling you, we're going to get you out of your... He gave them not just the bare minimum, not just what it took to discharge his obligation or to fill the hunger pangs in their stomach. He cared about them. So he planted an aishel. He built an inn. Abraham's B&B, baby, right? He created this experience. You know what else aishel stands for? Aishel, aleph, shin, lamed, achila, shtia, levia, eating, drinking, and escorting. That's what Abraham did. Eshel, achila, eshel. Yeah, that's what his sages say. Straight up. He fed them and he drank them. He gave them to drink and he escorted them. Achila, shtia, levia, eshel. And what does it mean? He cared about them. And now we understand the lesson from the story of the angels. And how we can derive the eternal lesson and message of hospitality from Abraham. We asked before, but Abraham didn't fill any needs of the angels. And now we know it doesn't matter. It's not tzedakah. I gave the example before of, there were no needs. Like tzedakah, you didn't do a mitzvah. There were no. It's not tzedakah. Hospitality, Hachnasas Archim, is connecting. Did Abraham connect with the angels? The answer is yes. Did he care about them? Yes. Did he express his compassion, his love, his empathy, his care, his devotion? The answer is yes, 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 yes. Did he fulfill the mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim? Yes. Even if they didn't drink, even if they didn't really eat, even if they didn't need a place to sleep, he still created a connection. The message for us, and the takeaway for it, makes sense? Yes, yes, yes. The message for us is very simple. Whether it's in the very traditional sense, the literal sense of somebody that needs a place to eat, somebody at Shabbat dinner, invite someone over to stay, for whatever it is, if you know someone, on a very basic level, it means hospitality in the home. And the main thing is not just to discharge the obligation or whatever it is that we feel like they need, but to really create a connection, to forge a connection with him. That's the basic message, right? The deeper message is that in whatever we're doing, there are ways to connect with someone and ways to just, as they say in Yiddish, Hebrew, whatever, to be yoytze zayin. How do you translate that? To be yoytze zayin?
To fulfill the obligation.
Yeah, I had to do it. I had an obligation. It's a yoytze zayin. I did it because I had to. In every area, many areas of life, there's a way to do it in which you're just doing it because you have to. Or you're doing it because you care about what you're doing. So this class hopefully can inspire us or is inspiring us to do things a little bit more because we care, because we love, because we're dedicated, because we're committed, and not just because we have to. May we take these messages to heart and really connect with others. After all, it's there that the true divine image lies. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for Torah Studies.